All right, welcome everybody. I'm Jason Perkins. I'm the brewmaster at Allagash Brewing. I'm also the chair of the Brewers Association Quality Subcommittee. I'm here to do some very brief introductions. Thank you for coming to Building a Field Quality Program. Glad to see this room is nice and full. This is a piece of quality that doesn't get talked about enough, in my opinion, so I'm really glad to see you guys here. You're lucky, very knowledgeable panel up here. I can't imagine a better group to talk about this stuff here. So I'm just going to give brief introductions. They have illustrious resumes you can read about on the CBC app or in your handout. So we've got up here moderating today. We've got Neil Witte, who is the founder of Craft Quality Solutions, also is the Brewers Association's quality ambassador, as well as co-draft quality ambassador for the Brewers Association. Next to him is Matt Meadows, who's the director of field quality for New Belgium, is also the chair of the Brewers Association Draft Quality Subcommittee, as well as co-chair Draft Quality Ambassador as well. We've got David Monroe, National Field Services Manager for Bell's Brewing Company. And at the end, we have Matt Labeson, who's the field quality manager for Ballast Point. So without further ado, please welcome me in welcoming all these folks up here. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for coming. You know, to just repeat a little bit of what Jason said, we've got a really great panel up here. Many years of experience working in this area. A lot of good, valuable information here. So I want to take just a second and allow these guys to introduce themselves to you and talk a little bit about themselves, their background, and kind of the nature of their own programs there. So we'll start off here with Matt.
Sure. Yep. So, I'm Matt Meadows, Director of Field Quality for New Belgium. I've been with New Belgium since 2002, have been in this role since 2006, and that's around the time that we started developing our field quality program. And as we talk today, I'll talk a little bit about that evolution of where our program was, you know, 10 or 12 years ago to where it is today. But in a nutshell, basically what our program is, it's all about auditing and training. So we do a lot of surveying of the market, auditing of the market to identify opportunities. And then we act on those opportunities with a training program for our retailers, for our wholesalers, for our own internal staff. The structure of our field quality program, I'm our director of field quality, and then we have three divisions. We're in all 50 states as of just last year. We have three divisions within those, and we have a field quality manager for each of those divisions. And then we also have a local draft quality expert based in Fort Collins that we're able to utilize as well. But that's, in a nutshell, sort of the structure of our field quality program. Pass it over to David.
Hi, David Munro from Bell's. I've been with the Bell family since January of 2009. We looked at 2014 is when we looked internally for an external quality program to support the amazing quality program we have internally at the brewery. We first of all looked at forming a field quality team, which is what we did. We had five people covering the whole country where we'd distribute. Late last year, I took a look at that and decided that the smartest thing to do, rather than have five people cover 8 to 10 states each, would be to bring the knowledge level of the sales team up to, you know, their level of knowledge. And so we brought all of our field quality people into a new position called sales development specialists, and their role is now to take all of that field quality information as well as all of the training. And now we're going to have 120 people out there with the knowledge of being quality specialists. And that's where we are today.
My name is Matt Labeson. I've been at Ballast Point for, I guess, 4.5 years now. I started in our lab doing daily quality control aspects of things. And as we were growing, we kind of realized we needed to, like these folks, needed to explore the opportunities to learn more about the quality of our beer after it leaves the brewery. So we essentially started this field quality program almost 3 years ago, so the youngest perhaps of everyone up here. When we first started, it was myself and one of our sales reps at the time covering Portland, Oregon. I live in San Diego, so we kind of chopped the country in half horizontally, which was a bit much. Now we have four people, including myself, kind of each corner of the country. I came from the quality side, and then the other three are more or less sales background, with the opportunity to learn more about our quality and have our field quality program structured that way. So about 3 years old, the program, and still growing and seeing what's going to happen in the future.
Great. I'm Neil Witte. I am the owner of Craft Quality Solutions. I do consulting in all tiers of business. My background is in field quality as well. I spent 16 of my 19 years at Boulevard Brewing Company doing field quality for them, working with distributors, retailers, and ultimately our national sales team on quality issues in the marketplace. I'm also the quality ambassador and the co-draft quality ambassador with Matt. So I take the messages of both the quality subcommittee and the draft quality subcommittee and bring it to the to Brewers Guild groups and other related industry groups and kind of spread the message of all the great content that the BA creates for brewers like yourselves to help make and serve better beer. So we're going to dive right in. We've got a few kind of broad questions that, you know, pose to the panel and let them kind of run with that. The first question is, what field quality basics would be helpful for any brewery to implement, regardless of size, beer style, and budget? And we'll start off with Matt. What do you think about that, Matt?
Yeah, so this one is kind of near and dear to my heart because I was sort of, when I was first put into this role, 12 years ago, it was a little bit of a daunting title, and director of field quality, wasn't quite sure what that meant, what we were going to do with that. And as we think about when that beer leaves the brewery and all the hands that it touches and all the different decision makers that have an impact on that beer, and you know, I think about a distributor or a city that maybe has two different distributors, and one distributor orders 2 weeks of inventory and another distributor orders 6 weeks of inventory. And the fact that those consumers on one side of the city are going to get 1 month fresher beer than the consumers on the other side of the city, just these little decisions that are made by individuals throughout the process, it just became very apparent to me what sort of a need there was out there. And I'll tell sort of a quick story here of how that philosophy was developed. We were surveying. This would have been 06. We were in Budweiser's backyard in St. Louis, and I was out surveying with one of our beer rangers, and we had a bad fat tire. It was oxidized. We were getting some paper, some raisin, some age notes that shouldn't have been there. So we started doing some investigating of the draft system. The lines looked pretty clean. The beer was actually in date. Temperatures looked good. Storage looked good. And then I see a little bubble blender, and these are these old bubble blenders from decades ago, and they're indicative of one thing that we always keep our eyes open for. And so I propped a ladder up on the cooler, and I went up there, and sure enough, I see an air compressor sitting up on that cooler. And I look down at our beer ranger, and he's like, "Air compressor," and I had this smirky little grin on my face that I can't quite wipe off, and he is just head in his hands and just like so depressed about this. He's like, are you happy we just found an air compressor? And I was like, that's kind of when it hit me. And I was like, yeah, that is what this field quality thing is all about. There are issues out there. This is not a cat and mouse game trying to get somebody in trouble. There are issues out there. If we identify the issues, we're going to fix those issues. So that's when it really hit me what field quality was kind of all about. And I think to really dive into that question, for every brewery out there, you need to know your beers. You need to know your brewery, what's important to you. You need to develop your own set of standards. What's your shelf life? And make that consumer legible. Make that wholesaler legible. What are your temperature standards? What are your draft beer quality standards? And the Brewers Association has done a great job of that for us. Page 66 here, just to plug the draft quality manual, pretty much has your draft quality standards outlined already for you. But really developing those standards, putting them in writing, and communicating them to your wholesalers and the people that are investing in your brand is really the most important thing. And that's something that you don't need dollars to do, to put these things in writing, to communicate them out, and let those wholesalers know what your expectations are. I think that's it's kind of your bare minimum way to start a field quality program. I'll let these guys jump in here.
Yeah, so as far as I look at the word basic and helpful in implementation, and it starts with creating SOPs for your brewery that relate to quality that you expect in the market. And so before you put ink to paper with your distributor partners in the three-tier system, make sure that you have SOPs in place. Make sure that it is part of your contract with them. Our distributors there, they're there to work with us. They want to sell as much beer as they can. And so make sure that you clearly define and lay out your SOPs, your drive for quality. That's really important. We're very quick to blame other people, and sometimes we just need to take a look in the mirror and say to ourselves, am I blaming somebody because I haven't looked internally? We also do a lot of, we do a lot of trainings out in the market on field quality. And I've seen some people doing some trainings, and they haven't even been trained themselves internally by their own brewery. They talk about their beers and mention the wrong hop or the wrong malt, and they have no idea what the volumes are in their draft beer and their CO2, so they can't set up a draft system properly. So there's a lot of things that we can do in the basic side, and that's prepare ourselves internally at the brewery first before we go out into market. So put your SOPs in place, make sure your people are trained tremendously well internally, and then once you've got all that achieved, go to your second tier distributor partner and really welcome them in, to your drive and your passion for field quality, and bring them along for the journey and show them so that when you and your distributor partner walk into a retail account, you are both there on the same page with the same message looking for the same success.
I mean, I agree with these guys, obviously. I wouldn't be up here if I didn't agree all the time. I think, just last week or the week before, I was actually looking back at more or less our proposal that we first wrote when we launched field quality at Ballast Point. And a lot of that still rings true today, which is pretty cool. So I think for you, whether or not you have a budget to have separated field quality team, or maybe you're going to integrate it to your sales team. But when we first started, we didn't have any of those things, and we had no idea what the future of Ballast Point field quality was going to become. So at the time, we kind of just wrote down what we thought was important. So kind of like Matt was saying, follow the journey of a beer from the time your raw ingredients come in all the way through until a consumer is buying it, either a pint of it or a bottle of it at a grocery store, for example. And we kind of wanted to measure and track who is touching it, where is it going, how is it being handled, what information can we learn as a brewery to improve upon those steps too. I think right off the beginning, I was ready for a home run. I was like, all right, let's fix all the problems right here and be over and done with. And that's not the case, right? You have to make little baby steps. And yeah, there are issues out there. But the idea is to, once you write everything down and what's important to you at your brewery, then you can start to gather information, collect data objectively, and start to understand where you can actually make little improvements too. And for us, a lot of that was initially just to have reverse feedback, right? We wanted to make sure that whatever we find out there, we can go back to our brewery and say, here, this is what we've collected. This is the issues that we're finding. Let's make improvements first at home, and then we can start to utilize our distribution channels. And one thing I want to make sure is that, again, there's all different size breweries currently, even in this room, and make sure that before you even create the idea of a field quality program, that your quality standards internally are spick and span. You want to make sure that the consistency of your beer is where it should be, you're happy with the batches that you're brewing, so that then you can understand what it means to have a true to brand or true to type beer out in the field. So make sure you write those down and adhere to them, and then you can start to look at your priorities and objectives outside of the brewery.
Yeah, Matt talked about batches. Let's make sure that, when we're packaging our beer, that you put on a package date or you put on an expiration date that is clearly red, that you don't need Captain America's decoder ring to look at the damn thing. Make it easy for everyone to understand, not only our own salespeople, and our distributors, but even for the consumer, The consumer is driving our business out there. They should have the right to know this. It's very important to make sure that you track everything as well. You know, when you are sending out this beer, make sure you know where it's going, what distributor got what. You know, put as much tracking behind it as you possibly can.
And the three-tiered system is a really, really powerful system when it's utilized. And what I have found is wholesalers really respond well to clear communication. So when you let them know your standards, when you clearly date your beers, they will act on that. They absolutely will. I think that was one of the big questions we had, is like, well, what's the stick we're going to put in place to make sure that these guys do this? And all it was communicating our standards and asking. And wholesalers are really that three-tiered system is really powerful, like I said, and wholesalers are anxious to act on it and to do the work that you ask them to do. You just have to make that clearly communicated to them.
Great stuff. You know, one of the things that resonates with me about that is the discussion of standards. And, you know, I talk about this when I talk to Brewers Guild groups as the quality ambassador. You know, one of the things that I talk about a lot and that came up here is setting standards for yourself, both in the brewery and outside the brewery. Because it's really hard to hold to strict quality standards if you don't really have a good grasp of what your beer really is, and if your people don't have a really good idea of what your beer is. Having a clear identity for your beer and the expectations of it, setting the standards inside the brewery, and then having standards or SOPs for what happens outside the brewery as well. So setting standards is kind of that core. If you don't really have a good idea of what your beer is to begin with, it's kind of hard to build a great quality program around that. It's good stuff. So next question, David talked a little bit about education, mentioned that a little bit. So, you know, maybe you can kind of expound on that a little bit. Who do you educate and train? How does this add value to your brewery's role in the three-tier system?
Yeah, I mean, we all love going into retail accounts, don't we? Like going to Joe's Bar and training all the staff. We feel good when we come out of it. And, you know, that's certainly, you know, a really important part. But, you know, you've really got to go in order. You've got to make sure that internal training is of the utmost for all of your folks. Anybody that's going out on the street and representing your breweries with a logo on them, make sure that you have some sort of internal training program set up with some metrics set that have to be reached before they can go out and work with their distributor partners and work with their retail partners and talk about their brands. Training is a huge part of everything that we do at Bell's. But we sell beer. Bottom line is we sell beer. We want to sell more beer. And you can't do that if people have gaps in their knowledge. I was with one of our salespeople. We stopped in. There happened to be an event going on from another brewery. And I ordered one of the beers. And I asked the young person everyone's young to me these days. So, about this beer. And I'd read the description on the menu. And what this person was telling me was a completely different beer. And I actually stopped him and I said, are you sure you're talking about the right beer? And he, yes. And I said, well, why does your menu say this? And he looked at the menu and went, oh, that's right, that is this beer. That's not the right way to go about it, is it? So start internally and then take that knowledge to your distributor. To use this three-tier system to sell more beer. Okay, be the best partner that you can possibly be. Train them as much as you can. I know that we don't get as much time in front of them as we want to. Maybe you can do it on a one-on-one basis, you know, with workwits in the market. Don't go for a ride-along where you sit in the car on your phone, answering texts, pasting Facebook messages. Take that day of a workwit to actually go and educate someone and train somebody. You know, maybe identify one or two salespeople within your distributor that are really going to drive the volume for you. And spend the time with them. If you can't get in front of the whole sales team, make that effort. And they'll love it because, you know, some distributors, I mean, a lot of distributors on commission basis as well. So the more beer they sell, the more money they make. And I think that's the business we're in as well. I like to go on vacation once in a while with more money in my pocket. You know, I usually spend it on beer, but, you know, that's just the business I'm in, so... And if I don't go on vacation, I just go down the road and spend it on beer. So. And then after that, go to the retailer and, you know, do retail training and consumer training as well. You know, we're so fortunate to be in a business that we love. I mean, for God's sake, we make and sell some of the most amazing beer in the world. It ain't like it's window washer wipers or wiper fluid. You know, we have fun doing this. So while you're having the fun doing it, make sure that you're educating and training everybody to do it right. Matt.
Yes. I'm paying
attention. Come on, youngster.
Everyone,
sure you don't want a booster chair?
Can you guys see me back there?
Oh, man.
It's all right. We've been doing this all day. It's fine.
Come on, little buddy.
Well, aside from that little remark, I would agree with Dave to a lot of extent. Going back to where our field quality program was in the very beginning, and maybe you guys don't have a field quality program of your own, or you will like to have one that's separate from your sales department, we wanted to make sure and kind of bridge the gap between our quality department and our sales team, so internally first. And even before the genesis of Ballast Point Field Quality as a separate entity, when we had our maybe quarterly sales meetings where everyone flew into San Diego, we took that as an opportunity for the sales team to kind of know what's going on at the brewery, whether it's the process related of the production or the quality lab itself, kind of demystify that gap. Because if we're going to, you know, standardize how we talk about our beers out in the field, they have to make sure they know every little bit about what's actually going on, so we're not making up things on the fly. So in the very beginning, we started off with that exact set is if you have the opportunity to have everyone come together, learn about your process, know your brands through and through, not just the beers themselves and what they taste like and from a sensory aspect, but the actual process of it, too. So you can talk ad nauseum about your beers and accurately, too, and have that same message across the way. Last thing we want to do for Ballast Point is have our home market in San Diego know everything about our beer, but then the farther away you get from the brewery, the less you know. That doesn't help us, or the wrong information. We want to make sure that that message is consistent. So we started with that, and as we started growing, we did more trainings, and it can't just be one and done, right? It has to be reoccurring. And the most impactful way to get training, whether it's our own sales team or our distributor presentation or whatever it is that we can schedule, the best way to do things, and it's always impactful, and I get a kick out of it, is to take a true-to-brand beer of ours, say Sculpin IPA. This is what Sculpin should taste like. It has grapefruit, it has tropical flavors, this is what it should look like, this is what it should smell like throughout its shelf life. And then this is what happens to a Sculpin IPA when it's destroyed out in the market, whether it's warm stored or misrotated, or God forbid it just got shoved to the back and it popped itself back up a year and a half later. Gives myself an aneurysm just thinking about that right now. But having that side by side, just visually, aromatically, and then of course you taste it, doesn't matter if you know everything about beer or you know nothing about beer. You can see that difference and taste that difference right away. And that's so impactful, and it's super simple to do. Anyone here can do that with your beer, and it's the best way to really educate everyone about what you're trying to protect, right? It's that idea that if everyone is in this together, if quality is everyone's responsibility, not just the brewers, but throughout distribution, shoot, even to the customer, even. Make sure we're educating about what it takes to protect your beer through cold storage, through cold shipments, through proper rotation, proper standards and procedures that you have. And make sure that's all very transparent. There's no reason to be, mysterious about it. But having that side-by-side example over and over again is always impactful. And so I highly recommend that.
Yeah, and to piggyback on that, I like what Matt was talking about with that side-by-side comparison. You know, a lot of what we want to talk to you guys about today are approachable ways to approach field quality, things that aren't going to cost you a lot of money. Aging your own beer doesn't cost a lot of money. In fact, one of the things I love to do that I think is one of the most impactful things, take a beer that's right at its shelf life. I'll age it throughout that shelf life for about 30 days at room temperature just to emulate an average display, and take something that's about a week before it goes out of date and then compare that to fresh beer. And then when you see those eyes start to pop open with your wholesalers or your retailers and say, this is, you know, fresh fat tire, and this is fat tire that hasn't even gone out of date yet, or this is Sculpin that hasn't even gone out of date yet, and all of a sudden they're like, wow, that's how impactful this time and temperature is. So doing this hands-on approach is really important. And our wholesalers,
this is an area where your field quality program can add value to your wholesalers and to your retailers. And we live in an era right now where wholesalers want information, they're after it, they're seeking Cicerone certifications. If we can help them along with that, same thing with our retailers, if we can add value to them by teaching them about off flavors, teaching them about draft line quality, teaching them about glassware cleanliness, these are all things that add value to their establishments and help all of our collective beers. So think of ways that you can educate to improve quality, but also to really add value and raise the collective bar.
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, adding value is very important. We love to entertain, don't we? We love to have, you know, distributors and retailers, visitors at, you know, our breweries and our tap houses. If they've taken the commitment to travel and see you and, you know, come to your building, are we going to get drunk? Of course we are. But let's not get drunk an hour after they get there. All right? Take the time to set up a classroom. All right? We do something with our distributor partners called immersions, where we have them commit to coming into Kalamazoo, which is obviously a fantastic, glamorous city, just like we're in today. And they come in for 2.5 days. And obviously we have a lot of fun. We have a lot of beer. We have a lot of conversation and banter. But we actually do about 3.5 hours of classroom as well. And one of the things that really drives home is we go through our core brands and we go through our seasonals at the time and do a true-to-type tasting with all of our distributors and all the salespeople in that room so that they're in an environment that they can actually get what we're talking about as far as the aroma and the look and the taste and the mouthfeel of the beer. Because if you try to do that down at Joe's Bar, and if anyone owns a bar called Joe's, I'm sorry, I'm just going to pick on Joe's Bar today, and yet you're talking about the wonderful aromatics of the Centennial Dry Hop, and the person standing next to them has no deodorant, the person standing next to them on the other side has Chanel No. 5 bottle poured over their head, and you're telling them to pick out aromatics from that beer, they're just going to nod their head like a bubble doll, you know? So when you do have the ability to get people to your brewery, take that time to do a little bit of education. It doesn't have to be 3.5 hours. It could be 45 minutes. It could be 2 of your beers. It could just be your flagship, whatever you want to drive home. But spend some time doing that and then go out and get sloshed. You know, it's all right. It's what we do. It's the business.
Nice. One thing I'll add to that, too, to piggyback on what everybody said here, is the importance of training your own people. You know, obviously, you know, all the brand identification, you know, what your beers are, all that needs to be translated to the distribution network, your retail partners. But, you know, if you're distributing beer, you probably have feet on the street. You've got people out there already who are, you know, who are working with distributors. And it doesn't have to be a field quality manager. But, you know, those people are passing along the message, too. So training your people internally is one of the most important things you can do. Because how can they be preaching the message the right way if they don't even know the correct information themselves? So let's go ahead and move on. I got one last question, and we haven't started with you at the end, Matt. So why don't you start off with this one. How do you convey your brewery's quality standards and priorities in the field? What systems are in place to promote feedback and improvement?
All right, yeah. Well, first off, like Dave has pointed out, I'm not the biggest guy here. So I'm not intimidating, obviously. I'm almost as tall as this microphone right here. So with that fact, I mean, distributors, when they hear quality, they freak out, right? They're like, oh, God, we're going to get in trouble. They're going to start dinging us for this and that. And then they see me like, oh, you're barely 5 feet tall. We're not worried about that. But that's kind of the message, right? The message should not be punitive. The message should be collaborative. It should be adding value. It should be supportive. And it should go both directions. So going back again, how we first started our program was, let's again write everything down, figure out what systems in place we need to achieve so that we can actually get feedback both to distributors, but more importantly, from the field back to our brewery to drive improvements. It doesn't have to be some magnificent home run like I was first referring to. It can be something as simple as date code location, getting feedback from your sales team, having that outlet as a field quality representative or someone that's just an ear to their voice so that they know that they can provide feedback and make things improve back at the brewery. So in the very beginning, we had simple things like on our mother cartons, on our bottles. We had no idea until we started asking questions and providing feedback back to the brewery. We had no idea that sometimes we were putting too much glue on the top and not enough glue on the bottom. Ridiculous. Like, you know, if you're struggling to open up the top and then bottles are falling out, that's silly. But that's something that is easily fixable, something we can report back. Even date code placements. You know, we had plenty of feedback saying, if you put it over here, we'd be much more appreciative. No problem. Simple things like that. And even when there are bigger problems, because like we've mentioned, there are issues out there, having that communication back towards the brewery, let's say, for example, it's draft isn't pouring properly on certain kegs, and if you didn't have a forum for that communication to happen, then there'd be no way to alert your draft kegging team at the brewery that things need to improve. So that was initially part of what we wanted to do, collect information, get that issues notified, and then drive improvements back to the brewery. And again, that's still very much true today. We are still actively doing whatever we can to fix things out in the field and then make sure that back at the brewery we're making those improvements. Part of the communication is how to set up a market visit. So when a field quality representative does come into a new distributor or a current distributor or whatever, again, letting them know well in advance, you're not there to pop quiz them, you're not there to get them in trouble. It should be very collaborative, distributor and brewery should be hand in hand, understanding what standards we're looking for and where we want to make improvements. The classic example is a warehouse walkthrough, right? Some warehouse wholesalers are going to freak out if you're going to check their product because, you know, they've purchased it. So they're going to freak out if you find outdated beer, you find misrotated beer. But how we approach it at Ballast Point is, again, not punitive. We're not the beer police. We're here to be helpful, add value. So how we approach a warehouse walk, for example, is schedule it in advance. If they want to clean up the warehouse before we get there, that's fine. That's actually probably a good thing. But when we're doing the warehouse walk, we're not just there to check date codes and check temperatures and check rotation. It's also to check packaging. And maybe we screwed up. Maybe how we shipped them beer wasn't up to our standards. And without having eyes on it and having that conversation while you're there, there'll be no way of actually making things better. So that's a big part of even a warehouse walkthrough, which can be very intimidating to almost any distributor, especially the first go-around. So making sure that we know that everything should be collaborative, it's a team effort, and then we can start to communicate things the direction of going to retail as well. So again, when we're talking about like a market visit, we definitely schedule it in advance. We want to make sure that distributors know what we're trying to achieve. And then after we're done, we've hit the market, hit the trade, visited a bunch of accounts, then a recap. Remember, we want to be very transparent. There's nothing to hide. There's no reason to be secretive. It's supposed to be objective, take all the emotion out of it, and know that we're all about long-term growth. We're not about making a dollar today. We're about making money for a while, right? We want to stay in business for a long time, and quality is the only way that that's going to happen, is if we can communicate ways to make improvements. And slowly but surely, you'll eventually get to a place where you're very satisfied. For me, I'm probably never going to be fully content. That's part of the nature of quality, right?
Is fully grown.
But that's the idea of quality, right? Is to make improvements along the way and constantly striving to pursue improvement, too. So make sure it's fully communicative. Objective, remove all emotion out of it. There's no need to be yelling or getting anybody in trouble. It just doesn't help. Cool?
Yeah, and I agree with everything that Matt was saying there. For us, I think even more important than the standards that we have, it's having a collaborative and a collaborative relationship with our wholesalers and our retailers. Using diplomacy, really, when we first started our quality program, it was a lot of like, man, it looks like shit out there, and we found a whole bunch of this and a whole bunch of that, and that doesn't get you anywhere. That we're not putting any specifics behind it. It feels emotional. And then once we started saying, okay, we have these standards, let's create surveys that represent these standards, let's make it numbers-based, and let's say, here's where our expectations are, here's where you guys are. And then, as I've said, wholesalers are a really amazing group, and when you can clearly communicate that way to a wholesaler, they're like, okay, I know exactly what I need to do to make this happen now. And when you can do that in a non-emotional and diplomatic way, you're really going to get yourself a lot further. So develop those surveys. We've got some pictures of some surveys up here. And this doesn't have to be much. This is Excel spreadsheets. I mean, some of us do have the technology to do things on our phones these days, and that's way more approachable today than it was 10 years ago. But really, start in Excel. Just put some basic surveys together. And if you have somebody that's somewhat Excel savvy, that survey can then look like that middle picture where you get a couple of pie charts along with it, and you have a nice polished report to send off. That doesn't take much. That's just a little bit of computer time sort of putting together those standards you've already created in an objective survey that can be now delivered to your wholesalers. So really approachable ways of doing this.
So conveying standards starts at the beginning, like I said earlier. It starts with, you know, that contract, you know, when the signatures go there. That's the first. You can't hold feet to the fire if you haven't, you know, shown them what the fire is going to be. So that's the first step. In the field, you know, is there anybody in the room that doesn't have a smartphone? So we are really dumb, aren't we, because we've all got these smartphones. I mean, use them for more than Facebook. You know, take pictures of stuff in the market. Share it with your distributor partners in the right way. You know, and you use every tool that you possibly have. We're fortunate that we use VIP and Karma. And so we have up-to-the-minute data given back to the brewery. So if there is an issue out there, we can know with it, you know, within minutes, you know, a report will come through to me. And, you know, we can do, if it's something that I deem to be an investigation, you know, we'll take a look, and, you know, internally. You know, usually it's, you know, it's everybody else's fault except our own, of course. But, but you know, promoting feedback and everything, I mean, 4 years ago, I remember that we have this 26-year-old beer called Oberon, if anyone hasn't heard of it. It's an unfiltered wheat beer that's got a lot of turbidity in it, and everyone used to complain how cloudy the goddamn beer was, and now everyone's making New England IPAs. So. But 4 or 5 years ago, we were getting 500 kegs during our summer season come back to the brewery with what I call bullshit excuses, saying too cloudy, very, very cloudy, very milky. And I'm like, God, isn't that a good description of Oberon? I thought that was how we're supposed to be making this wonderful beer. And we realized that we hadn't done a good job, you know, educating our retailers. And the reason we hadn't done a job educating our retailers is because we hadn't educated our distributors. And the reason we hadn't educated our distributors is that word of mouth had gone astray within our sales team. And a few of us knew and a few of us didn't. And so we looked internally again, and we did a whole revamp of literally retraining everybody on Oberon and how it should be stored. And no, it shouldn't be stored upside down, because that is a health and safety risk of having somebody flip a 165-pound keg over. And we created this thing called the Oberon Shake, where we teach people just to do 10 or 12 shakes of the keg to raise that yeast and protein up so that it becomes cloudy, as Charlie would say. And then from then on, as soon as we got our sales force trained on that, we took it to our distributor partners. We created a video, we created some sell sheets and some leave behind sheets, and then we took it to retail. And the following year, total, we had under 40 kegs of Oberon come back. So I would say that was a pretty big win of conveying the right message through the right channels, and, you know, saving a lot of money, but also probably selling more beer. Because if somebody pulls a beer off because the quality is not good out in the market, they're not going to buy another keg of it, are they? So not only did we save kegs, we probably grew the business more by doing that. So conveying the right message is very important. Putting things in place is very important.
So. Just to piggyback on that too, you know, we all have beer that costs money, right? Sometimes some are more expensive than others. And even if you're an average customer out there, unrelated to the brewing industry, if you're buying a pint of beer for $8, let's say, or a six-pack for $13 or more, and if it's not right that first time, you're going to never buy that beer again, maybe never buy that brewery's beer again. You might even tell your friends and your family to what happened. And it might just be something that just happened out in the field, right? And so having that system in place to know about where things can go wrong and so that you can fix it will prevent that from happening. Make sure that you're actually growing your sales, not hurting it one and done and having the brewery blamed for what happened out there too.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, the part, an essential part of communication, something that came up here is the documentation part of it. And that's all part of kind of the diplomacy part of it too. Because if you're out there and you're doing audits on accounts, or if you have salespeople doing audits, or if you have a field quality manager, a dedicated person doing that, you should be keeping some type of track. And it doesn't even have to be complicated. It can just be, you know, a form you print up on a piece of paper, or it can be an Excel file, or it can be something a little more complicated, depending on how deep you want to go. It could be really simple, but you track it when results are good, and you track it when results are bad. Because if things have been bad, what your distributor partner doesn't want to hear is when you come and say, well, things have been bad for a while. We've found a whole bunch of instances of this happening. And they were like, well, this is the first we've heard of it, right? So, you know, if you're documenting everything, and then when something comes up, it's like, hey, man, you know, I saw this happened, you know, and you just have a friendly conversation about it, they're usually happy to just fix that, right? But then if you have to keep calling them about it, then it's like, hey, man, you know, this has been, you know, a few times, and, you know, we talked about it before, and you've got all the documentation. It's like, you know, and then if it ever does become a problem, you can say, hey, all right, you know, so I've done, you know, 50 audits in the market, and you know what? You know, 35 of them were fantastic, but 15 of them were really bad. And so you've got the good, and that which allows you to have that kind of friendly diplomatic conversation, but you've also got record of all of the issues that you found, and it's easier to address that way. So that's all part of effective communication, is that documentation. Good stuff, again. This is kind of a fun one that I want everybody to just take a minute to do here. Give us an example of where your field quality program enhanced positive or enacted positive change. Matt, you want to start with that?
Yeah, sure. I think we could all give countless examples. I mean, pretty much any trip that I take, I come back with multiple stories of impact that we have made in a market. One that I think back on, well, just so I know, folks from the Twin Cities in this area. Okay, we got. All right, I may only potentially offend two people, so that's good. Just kidding, actually.
Matt hates Minneapolis.
I actually love Minneapolis.
It's on record. It's in writing.
I love Minneapolis, and I got to take a lot of trips up there early on, and I think you guys are from Minneapolis can probably agree with this. So we rolled out Minneapolis, the state of Minnesota, in 2008, I believe, and we started what we used to do. We would call, as we would roll out markets, we would do pre-sell quality surveys. So we would identify what are the issues in the market prior to selling the beer in. In some cases, we opted to maybe not sell beer to some specific accounts. In other cases, we opted to educate those accounts and see if we could influence change. When we first rolled Minneapolis, in these pre-sell surveys, we found that 80% of all accounts were running on air compressors in that city. And if you think about nationally, I mean, it's probably less than 5%, maybe even less than 1% that are running on air compressors. So it was a pocket. And there are pockets like this with different types of quality issues across the country. And this just happened to be a place where air compressors were a common thing. And we worked with our wholesalers, or with our wholesaler there in the Twin Cities, and we educated them on why that isn't the best approach. And they made internal changes. And we went out and we educated retailers and talked with them. And I'll say that back in 2008, this was the time where it was sort of a transitional time where you went from, you know, the Sam Malone bar owners, you know, the Cheers guys that, like, I want to own a bar because owning a bar is cool, to you start to have these beer nerds that are running bars and owning bars. So retailers were becoming more educated. Cicerone was on the rise. Consumers were more discerning, and they were paying more money and expecting more. And so we really had all of this influence from consumers to retailers to wholesalers out there preaching this message.
And if you go to Minneapolis today, and I'll let you guys chime in if you know, but I mean, I would say it's probably well under 20%, if not less than 10% of accounts running on air compressors these days. And lots of, and equipment manufacturers as well have been a big part of that, getting in there and saying, hey, let's improve your equipment. But I think that's a great success story. I felt like New Belgium was a catalyst, but it was a huge group effort across all the tiers to really make a huge change in one city. So I thought that was a really fun success story.
Awesome. David, real quick?
Yeah, so, I mean, enacting positive change. I mean, there's so many things we talk about, and we haven't got much time because he's taken way too much time when he's been speaking. So, but, you know, I mean, think of something simple like frozen glassware. It's an absolute hatred of mine. It makes our beer smell like shit, look like shit, and taste like shit. So I hate frozen glassware. And it's part of one of the presentations I give. And, you know, when I'm talking to the retailer, I look at two sides. You know, I look at their face and their body gestures. Do they want me to talk about the quality side of frozen glassware or the profit side? And, you know, you can take them down either path, but make sure you come back to the same point of this is the reason why. But on the quality side of frozen glassware, I was doing a presentation, and a young man in the audience kept raising his hand, and I said, questions at the end, I'll get right, you'll be the first. And I got to the end of my presentation. He said, I'll give you an example of why you shouldn't have frozen glassware. I said, okay. He goes, I was putting myself through school, and I was the closing bartender. Myself and my roommate were closing bartenders of a bar in Florida. And the owner allowed us, once the doors were locked, chairs were up, floors were mopped, we were able to have a shifty. And, you know, at the time it was, you know, popular to have a 24-ounce frozen glass of the light lager in this bar. And so him and his buddy sat down at like 2:30 in the morning, sitting there, poured themselves a couple of big old frosty ones, sitting there having a chat and crunching on the ice, and his buddy suddenly reached into his mouth and pulled out a painted toenail. What's worse is they knew whose toenail it was. It was the closing bartender from the night before. She'd sat on the bar and clipped her toes, and one had gone into the wash sink, got stuck inside the glass, and then ended up frozen inside this glass that, fortunately for the bar, one of their own got it. But can you imagine if that went into the hand of a consumer? So, you know, so frozen glassware is a hatred, not only on the quality side, but also the profit side. And, you know, it's just something, a simple story like that sort of drives me every day to, you know, make sure that we enact change, you know, within all of our tiers of our business. I told this at lunchtime. He didn't eat his lunch, as you can tell.
Well, with that horror story, Matt, do you have something a little?
It's like having mini me. I feel like my ears get in my belly.
I didn't know my dad was coming to this conference.
You're no longer a bastard, then.
I don't have anything nearly as disgusting as that. I might throw up a little bit right now. I think one of the stories that was coming to my mind is on the retail side. So again, going back to the beginnings of our fuel quality program, we want to do things as much in the right of quantitating things, right? What can you do? What's the easy things you can do to measure, collect data, and then enact on those changes too? So on the retail side, in the very beginning, the first time going to this market, I'm not going to say where it was or which account it was. You can ask me later.
But Minneapolis.
It wasn't. But we went to this account, and without any education, without any fuel quality in place beforehand, our distributor was doing whatever they can to sell as much beer as possible. No, you know, no fault to their own. They were never educated about our standards. They were never educated about the sensitivity of some of our beers or storage conditions and all that. So they shoved a bunch of beer into this one account, off-premise, by the way. And we had stacks and stacks of beer, and walked into this account, and I was with our sales rep, and he quickly realized what we were looking at. I was actually pretty happy. I was pretty giddy that we're actually going to make some things happen here. He almost died a little bit, and lo and behold, like 95% of our beer there was out of code. Not only was it out of code, but it was completely misrotated. It was not stored in the fridge whatsoever. It was, you know, at the moment, heart-wrenching. But, you know, we fixed it. We educated the retailer about it. Of course, we educated the distributor about it. And that was 3 years ago. I've been to that same account, I don't know, maybe a dozen times, and every time I go there, the owner of that store is so grateful, so happy that we did that. The distributor is so happy. In fact, they're doing our job for us now. They're the ones telling customers about what we did that one time, open honesty, talking about you know, what we found and why this is, you know, needs to be improved. And now since we've gone there, a dozen times since I've been back in 3 years, some of the freshest beer that we have in this market at the store, they know about the standards that Ballast Point cares about. And ultimately, they're telling their customers about what happened, and they're now buying more beer. So growth, sales went up, quality improved. It was kind of a win. But you had that shock and awe moment in the very beginning that was a little terrifying. But since, it's, you know, been a pretty meaningful little story. Not as gross as a toenail in a beer, but, you know, still helpful.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Great. All right. Well, great stuff from everybody there. You know, main questions we covered there. We've got some key takeaways. I won't spend a bunch of time recapping here so we can leave some time for some Q&A. But, you know, developing standards, training and educating, and clear communication, you know, those are really the kind of the three core elements of a great field quality program. So let's go ahead and take a few questions. If you have a question, we've got a couple microphones over here, so this is going to be recorded for people to listen into. So if you have a question, come on up and ask it, and we'll put it to the panel.
Can you talk about the impact of growlers on the quality of draft beer and what you think about it in your field quality programs?
Sure. Yeah, I can cover that. The draft quality committee, what was this, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, Neil, we put together a set of standards for growlers. You know, that it's a tough one because we can put out these standards and what our expectations are and how we approach it, but a lot of it is in the hands of the consumer and what they choose to do with that beer once it leaves. So we do have a set of standards for filling and cleaning growlers. And we do recommend, and we actually, well, this is a good time just to talk about resources. Draftquality.org is a great place if you guys haven't visited it. You can get free download of the Draft Beer Quality Manual as well as Draft Beer Quality for Retailers, several one-pagers. You can find this growler document on there. And we also developed these growler tags that talked about, I believe it's within 48 hours of filling. We recommend that the entire growler be consumed. 72. Is it 72? Mm-hmm. We were back and forth. We stretched it a little bit. So I don't know how specific you were looking on your question there, but we do have these resources out there. We do a lot of educating on it, but ultimately a lot of it does come down to that end consumer and the decisions that they make with that growler. I don't know if you guys want to piggyback on that.
No, I mean, you know, obviously we're rewriting the manual right now, and we've extended, you know, a little bit more information in the next version. But it's all about cleanliness, it's about quality, and it's about educating that consumer as well. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of growlers, I'll tell you the truth, mainly because, you know, if they put it in the trunk of the car, forget about it, serve it to somebody 3 days later once it's been sitting in 100 degrees, and that person says, that doesn't taste like Two-Hearted. And he's like, ugh, Bell's is dropping their standards. It's our fault, isn't it? You know, so, again, you know, we purposely are very politically correct in our guidance within the manual. And so I would say direct everyone towards that.
Great. Annette?
I'm just wondering if you can talk or chat for a couple of minutes about draft quality, please. I know that's a huge area, and we could spend days just talking about draft quality. But to summarise, how do you put a program in place where it obviously has to start internally, I get that, but it takes such a long time to get down to the retailers, and constantly we're seeing overpouring, underpouring, foamy beer. Foamy beer is the main one, and by that I mean how do we get our retailers to understand what's in our keg and to set applied pressures accordingly? How, again, I know this is a little bit broad, but this is like the problem is we all see this every day.
Yep.
Bartenders pouring foamy beer because they don't know how to set the applied pressure based on the keg. There's no tag on the keg saying how many volumes of CO2 is in the keg. Good. But even if there was, how many people would even know what that means? So how do we get something like that going?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we could spend hours on that. And actually, we have an hour and a half this afternoon in room what for the draft quality committee. We'll be entertaining everyone for an hour and a half, and we'd love to talk to you more about that in a lot more detail.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just touching on something simple, Annette mentioned the volumes. Why are breweries not prepared to give up what volumes are in their beer? I mean...
Right.
Some of them don't know, true, yeah. You know? Well, you know, I think a pretty good median line is, say, 2.65, you know? But even when you have that, and you have... Does everyone have the Mgdantim app on their phone? You know, is anybody still using the plastic slide rule and, you know, holding it tight while you turn it over? But even when you've got the Mgdantim app, you can get it, you know, a little bit closer dialed in, but, you know, there's so many other things that go into that as far as, you know... Are restrictions in place? Is the balance in place? You know, are you really dealing with 60-40 gas, or have they brought 40-60 gas in? I mean, you know, there's a lot of things, but it's just continual education. It's visiting the accounts, knowing what you're working with, making sure that you have your distributors there, working with your draft teams as well, your distributors. I think there's 35 states that now have mandatory distributor line cleaning through their distributors. So go out and work with your, you know, your, instead of going out with a salesperson and having lunch and thinking that one stop is your day, actually get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and go and work with the draft maintenance team from your distributor and go and see what they do. Follow their procedures, take a look, and you'll get a really close look at the draft systems that way. But yeah, I mean, it's a conversation, Annette, where is she? There she is. That can go on for hours, but it's purely about education and training and just keep giving the tools that we have available to us.
Yeah.
So I think...
And I think the second half of what David was covering there is kind of how to deliver that message. And I say utilize that three-tiered system. In those 37 states where the distributor cleans the lines, work with those wholesalers because they have the draft technicians. If I walk into an account and they don't know me from Adam and I'm telling them, here's how they should approach draft quality, they're like, Tony's my draft guy. I'm listening to Tony. I don't know you. So go talk to Tony. You know, those are the guys that you have to get on board and understand this message, whether that's the draft manager for the wholesaler or in those other 13 states, we go out and we work with the line cleaning companies. We go out and develop those relationships. Dave, that's sitting there next to you. We work with these guys and make sure that they're preaching the right message because they're listening to Dave. They're not listening to me in Detroit, Michigan, you know. So really going out and speaking to the guy that's speaking to 200 accounts because you can't get out to 200 accounts and have that conversation, you know, except that. And go out and educate at that larger level.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and try and get a couple more questions in before we run out of time here. You've been waiting patiently over on this side.
Thanks. I'll keep it short. I just have a question about trucking beer. So from the brewery to the distributor, you guys have standards in place for, you know, refrigerated truck all the time, only during certain types of seasons, and do you have a way of auditing beer temperature in the truck if it's driving cross country? Or
I can give my real quick answer. We're 33 to 50 degrees. We do require it contractually with our trucking company. If it's our trucking company that we contract with, they report back to us. They have temperature monitors. If the wholesaler chooses their own trucking company, then we will on occasion put temperature monitors. I can give you brand specific if you're curious. But we will occasionally put monitors in those just to cross-check if we suspect that there might be an issue. But, yes, we do require it.
Yeah, and reputable truck companies do have, you know, data systems in place in their trucks. We know this for a fact at Bell's because one of our distributors, their trucking company, lost a whole load of Two Hearted for 5 days, had no idea where it was, and it was sitting in a yard. And obviously our concern was it refrigerated? And they're like, yeah, of course it was. It's like, well, how can you prove it to us? And they sent us the most amazing analytical data that absolutely confirmed to us that it was, but we didn't just accept that. We waited for that truck to be delivered, and we had five people on site at the distributor to pull random package out of that delivery and actually do a true-to-type sampling.
Great.
We do the same thing. We pay for all of our own shipping and all of our cold refrigeration. We have strict standards on the temperature of the truck from our brewery to a wholesaler, and we monitor it as much as we can. We put our own independent monitors in there as well to confirm what they're measuring is true.
Great. So we got time for one more over here.
Thank you, guys. Can you shed a little more light on working with a problem account and how you would approach that scenario, whether it's toenails in your beer or poor rotation of stock? You've referenced quite a few things, but I'd like to hear a little bit about how that goes down in the field and how you work with somebody cooperatively to bridge that gap.
So we treat an account with an objection or a quality issue just as you would. We approach it the same way as we would sell anything into that account. So we think about comm styles, communication styles, am I dealing with an analytical buyer here, a driver, whatever it is? What's their objection? How might I handle that objection? We really approach it the same way that you would go in and sell a handle. That's how we approach it. But we're doing it. We're selling just like you're selling a handle. We just happen to be selling more of a theory, or we're selling quality. But we approach it the same way, and we use that diplomacy. We don't want to say my way or the highway. And we also sort of, it's a marathon, not a sprint. If I'm not feeling this conversation's going well, I'm not doubling down on that. I'm going to retreat, gather my thoughts, think about how we want to approach it, come back. Now I know what their objections are. I know how I'm going to approach it the next time I come in.
Great.
That's how we do it.
So I don't mean to cut you off, but I know other people want to get to some presentations here. We are, if you want to speak further with us, we will all be in the draft quality subcommittee open house at 4 o'clock today at 106A, right downstairs, from 4 o'clock to 5:30. We'll all be down there, and you can talk to us there.
And beer and food will be there as well.
We'll talk at length.
Unlike this one.
Thank you for coming, everybody.
Thanks, guys.